started, so I will call the meeting to order. If we can have roll call, please.
Chair McAdoo?
Here.
Vice Chair Traychok?
Here.
Regent Carter?
Here.
Regent Lieberman?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
You have a quorum present.
Thank you for that. We will move on to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko? Any public comment in Reno? Any public comment here in Las Vegas? All right, we have no public comment, so we will move to the consent items, and I'm looking for a motion for approval, please.
So moved.
All right, and we've got a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I vote aye as well. The motion passes. And agenda item number three, if Vice Chancellor Renee Davis will come forward. Thank you.
For the record, Renee Davis, Nevada System of Higher Education. So we are presenting to you some updates to the planning report. At the request of the Council of Presidents, we will be bringing this to ARSA every 6 months in December and in June. And you'll see that five institutions have added some programs for the coming year or so. And apologies on the materials. You'll see that we did duplicate a page for GBC, so their list is not two pages long. It's just one page. So apologies for that. And when we update the actual planning report, of course, we'll only list them once. So if there are any questions on the actual programs that are being added, then I would defer to the institutions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the regents? Yes, Regent Perkins.
Are any of these available, like, 100% online?
I'm not sure. Are there institutional representatives from?
Renee, you know, if you don't mind, I'll take that one. This list for the planning report is basically programs that are not currently in place or being developed necessarily right now. It's their wish list. So there's a provision in state law, and there is a provision in the board handbook that requires that it's basically the equivalent of their academic master plan. So what this list does is it gives the board an indication of programs that the institutions are considering for development within the future. And typically, you'll see there's a column there that indicates a term for implementation. So the reason they're in this report is because they weren't included in prior reports, and we have a longstanding protocol that requires that before a program can come for final approval to this committee, it must be included in that report. So this is a protocol for the institution so that you're aware of what may be coming in the pipeline in the future.
Okay, if I can follow up. Excuse me. You said this is a policy and a policy or a procedure. So is there a procedure online for any of these to be 100% online?
So that is a determination that will be made by the institutions through the course of development. And depending on the Provost Carmen, did you, your...
Will you please, turn on your mic? Thank you.
Sorry. Kevin Carman, University of Nevada, Reno, Provost for the record. We have plans, and I won't speak for other institutions, but we do have several programs that are online. We have plans to bring several additional programs online that are already existing programs. And what we learned in the past is that to take an existing program and move it online, we don't need to get board approval because the program has already been approved, but we do have plans to bring several additional degree programs online in the future.
Thank you. I was asking out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? I will enter. Oh, I'm so sorry, Regent Carter.
Way down here.
See you. Thank you.
I'll scooch up a little bit here. So one thought or, I guess, question is if in this report we could add a column where we say what need this particular program addresses in our state. So like a justification for the program.
That actually is currently in the program proposal when it comes forward. So when it actually comes for you to approve the program, We can add that to this report. However, in some cases, these are programs that the institutions are just contemplating. So we can do that analysis, but it's a little bit the cart before the horse. But we can certainly add it. It will make it more difficult in terms of the reporting for the analysis that the institutions must do, because in many cases, they're proposing a program, and they may plan it for 1 year, but it actually doesn't come to fruition for several years, which is why when the formal proposal, so those would be your next agenda items that you have at this meeting, you'll notice that for all of those, there is a provision in there where it talks about industry demand and what demand that the program is actually meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Move for approval.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Motion from Regent Trachuk and a second from Regent Perkins to approve this revision. Any comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. Any dissension? All right. Thank you. All right. We will move on to item number four, agenda item four with TMCC, please. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, President Karen Hilgersum, for the record. I'll be very brief. In effect, we have divided one large instructional division, at least that is the request today, into two, primarily because of growth in the areas of sciences and health sciences. And so as the request specifically is to split the division of sciences into two separate divisions with new names, the result will be the division of life sciences, allied health and public safety, and division of math and physical science would be the second division. Interestingly enough, this is almost budget neutral, because in the process of reorganizing our deans about a year and a half ago, we eliminated a director position, which was relatively high paid. The workload of the current science dean has grown to 84 direct reports. So primarily, this was a way to manage our programs and ensure excellent program quality. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you for that information. Are there any questions or comments from the board? There being none, I will look for a motion.
So moved.
All right, Regent Perkins made the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
And Regent Carter seconded. Thank you for that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I vote aye as well. The motion passes. Thank you. Item number five, UNLV, please. Thank you, Dr. Heavey.
Good morning, Chris Heavey, Interim Provost at UNLV for the record. I'm pleased to be here this morning to ask for approval for a new doctoral program in school psychology offered by our College of Education. This is a program that is sorely needed in this state, which is underserved in the mental health realm, and will train people to both serve in schools to help the mental health needs of students, as well as potentially become licensed health service providers and function independently in private practice. And as a doctoral degree, it will also train students to do research in mental health needs and potentially pursue faculty positions. It's definitely aligned with the workforce mandate of NSHE to fulfill our state's need for professionals in these areas, and there is no currently existing school psychology program within the state of Nevada. The College of Education is well prepared to offer this program with the staff they already have in place, and the expectation is that the program will, as it develops, also seek accreditation from the American Psychological Association so that the graduates of the program will be able to pursue licensure as psychologists. Happy to answer any questions about the program.
I have a question. Will the graduates of this program that receive their PhD, will they have to go through the same licensing that a school psychologist or a school counselor goes through now? Let's say a master's, somebody holds a master's in school counseling, they require so many hours of internship and then have to take the state exam?
Yes, the level of licensure is actually higher than the school counselor license, so they would actually be eligible to pursue a license as a fully licensed psychologist once the program is accredited by the American Psychological Association. So it focuses on the mental health needs of students, but it also meets the requirements to become a licensed psychologist in practice within the state.
All right, I have a motion for approval.
Second. I will second that, Madam Chair, and if I may, this program is long overdue. We've had a shortage for a while, especially in the K through 12 realm, and I'm glad to see that this is going to fill that spot.
Okay. So the motion was by Regent Trachuk and the second by Regent Perkins. Are there any other comments or questions before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I vote aye as well. The motion passes, and I'm very happy with that decision.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 6, UNR Provost Carmen. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin Carmen, UNR Provost. For the record, I'm here to present a proposal for a master's degree in ecology, evolution, and conservation biology. This is something of a housekeeping item to a certain extent. We have a PhD program in EECB, as we refer to it. It's a very strong PhD program at the university. It's interdisciplinary, involves faculty in biology, natural resources, environmental science, and DRI, as well as other departments at the university. Very robust PhD program. Your document says that there's 40 to 50 students. I checked PhD students currently. I checked last night. There's actually 61 currently PhD students in the program, but it doesn't have a master's degree program, and most PhD programs have a master's degree that goes along with the PhD as an option for students who are interested in that area of study, and we know that there's strong interest in having a master's degree option, and we're asking you to approve this master's degree to go along with the PhD program.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion from Regent Trachuk for approval. Second from Regent Perkins. Are there any questions in regard to this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I vote aye as well. The motion passes. Thank you for that information. All right, item number 7 from WNC, Dr. Dalpy, thank you.
Good morning, Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College, Vice President of Instruction. We're here today with our second Bachelor of Applied Science degree. This one is in Organizational and Project Management. This will be, to previous comments, primarily, if not all, 100% online program to step students from our associate degrees, Associate of Applied Science degrees, into this. The college currently has one Bachelor of Applied Science degree in Construction Management. This would be our second. And so we're here today to request approval of this program for fall of 20.
All right.
Motion to approve.
A motion from Regent Lieberman. Second. A second from Regent Trachuk. Are there any questions or comments? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I vote aye as well. Thank you.
Thank you
for that. Mm-hmm. All right. Item number 8 is an information only item. And Vice Chancellor Crystal Abba and Research Scholar Theo Meek will present on this for the co-requisite policy. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. We bring to you today the status report that you have requested to be at each quarterly meeting concerning the implementation of the policy approved last June concerning co-requisite support for students that require remediation. So as you'll recall, just a quick reminder, in many respects, this work started in 2014 and accumulated in June last summer when you approved a policy that mandates full co-rec implementation by fall 21. With that, we have then created a system-wide task force that is made up of math faculty, English faculty, and administrators that include advisors and individuals from various aspects of the institution. That institutions. That group is responsible for a system-wide approach to co-requisite implementation. And our primary task at this point is developing an action plan that will provide guidance to the institutions in terms of how implementation will occur at full scale in fall of 21. So as we brought this group together, when I reported to you in September, we spent the summer essentially working with the consultants, Dr. Heidi Loschbaugh from Denver, Colorado. She has been helping us and guiding us through this process as she has had direct experience working with institutions in this realm before. So from that, we've had a number of meetings with the task force. Our first meeting was in, and you'll see there's a timeline that covers activities in September, October, and then going into November. Our first meeting was September 26th, and at that meeting, a key decision was made. And that decision related to how will the action plan be developed. And we gave the task force a number of options, and they actually chose an option that we had initially not considered. We had told them you can present your action plans at the institution level. In other words, this committee would have heard 7 reports. We gave them the option of a sector level report, so you would have gotten a report from community colleges and from the 4-year institutions. And to my surprise and delight, they have opted for discipline level reports. So that means that they are taking, and this is a watershed moment having been in the system for a number of years, because we've never had a discussion where there was such a strong willingness on the part of the institutions to develop pathways, plans, placement for math and English that will be consistent across all institutions. I mean, it is something that we have fought for a number of years, and I think timing is everything. And my hat's off to the institutions, particularly to the faculty who have embraced this work, embrace this work in a way that I did not expect. I would like to call out one institution in particular, and that's TMCC. Ann Flesher from Math, Julie Ellsworth, and Molly Maynard. As you know, TMCC, initially when this policy was proposed, they did express some legitimate concerns, and it is amazing to me when our biggest opponent becomes our greatest proponent, and Ann in particular, she's a bulldog. And she is really, in particular, working with the math faculty and pushing for these pathways that I think will make a significant difference. Because the reality of it is, when you look at the data now, despite the gateway policy, there still is a great deal of work to be done. And while the gateway policy laid the groundwork, this is the next step that's really going to take us over the edge. So the next meeting that we had, going back to the timeline, was November 21st. At the November 21st meeting, this was an opportunity where we brought in subject matter experts from the Dana Center, from the California Acceleration Project, because in the state of California, they passed legislation AB 507 that basically says that institutions cannot independently offer remedial courses. And so they're gravitating to either no remediation or the co-rec model. So following the September meeting, Theo and I and a group of faculty actually went to Citrus College in Ontario, California, and spent a great deal of time there understanding what they've done. And I think the most significant thing that I walked away with was the fact that that institution, which is about the size of CSN, they would not have been as successful as they have been if they didn't have financial resources and considerable financial resources that they threw at this work. For example, they invested $1.2 million in classroom enhancements. That means things like smart boards for the classrooms, collaborative desks, and things of that nature. So coming back from that meeting, Theo and I spent a great deal of time trying to figure out, okay, we've done what we always do, which is mandate that the institutions make a significant policy change, but we haven't given them any resources. So we felt like we had a moral imperative to go out and find some funding. And so to date, there is, of course, the Nevada Energy Incentive Plan, and you'll hear about that later on at the full board meeting in terms of the chancellor's plans for utilizing the first $1.5 million received to promote student success and in particularly co-requisite support. But in addition, and Theo will talk about that more now, we have a letter of intent from ECMC, which is a philanthropy group that is working with organizations like Bill and Melinda Gates. We're exploring other grant opportunities with NSF and, of course, requesting a legislative, putting together a package where we can present it to the board in terms of a legislative enhancement. So with that, Theo is going to tell you a little bit more about what we have planned for January and where we're at with the funding proposal from ECMC.
Excellent. Good morning. Theo Meek, Nevada System of Higher Education. As Crystal mentioned, we submitted a letter of inquiry to the ECMC Foundation, an organization that, like Crystal said, works with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They've been a strong supporter of Complete College America alongside the Lumina Foundation. We put in an initial letter of inquiry with them to fund some of our co-rec work. And just yesterday at about 11 a.m., we received notice that they accepted our first round, our initial application. And so now we're invited to submit a full proposal for $750,000 over a two-year period, for funds to be used over a two-year period. So we'll be submitting that proposal. It is due to them in mid-January. Their board meeting meets in April. And if it's approved at their board meeting in April of 2020, funds are all but immediately available for us to use, which is incredibly exciting. In the grand scheme, we would love to be able to use ECMC and any additional external funding that we receive to hopefully supplement in the form of bridge funding to what could hopefully be a legislative request for more long-term funding. So ECMC is a promising avenue for us to seek external funds. Our consultant, Dr. Heidi Loschbaugh, has also helped identify some National Science Foundation grants, as well as a grant through the Kellogg Foundation, which we are working to submit for as well. ECMC is particularly interested in funding faculty learning, professional development opportunities, which are one of the top needs that came out of the task force's meeting on November 21st. So we are working very strategically with how ECMC and what their interests are in funding and working alongside of the NV Energy, the prospective NV Energy incentive pay, to really marry together to potential funding sources for, you know, again, bridge funding. In January, we'll be hosting a webinar with each of the three disciplines. So Crystal mentioned the task force has decided to work in disciplines. So we have a math discipline, an English discipline, and then an administrative discipline. We are going to be hosting January virtual meetings with each of those three disciplines to touch base. One major ask after the November 21st meeting was that the system-wide task force began putting pen to paper in writing their action plans. And as Crystal mentioned, you'll hear the action plans in September at the September board meeting of next year. So the group is now putting pen to paper. So in January, we're going to touch base with all of them. And then at the last day of February 28th, we'll be hosting a meeting right back here at UNLV, thanks to Laurel Pritchard's help in bringing the group back together. Unless there's anything else, I just wanted to also add a quick thank you to the individual institutions. Each institution has developed an institutional task force as well to handle this. In addition, some institutions such as CSN and TMCC have formed discipline-specific institutional task forces. For example, Ann's group meets biweekly to talk about co-rec implementation alone, which is, it's an incredible feat. They have a very large task ahead of them, and we're extremely impressed and appreciative. So thank you.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a request, can we be included in those meetings, like the announcements, so we can hear like the thought process, I guess?
Absolutely, we'd be happy to invite regents to those meetings.
We'll ask Comalincy and Sub Council, though, you know, as per council.
Sure.
Are there any other questions or comments? I would just say I did participate in many of the beginning meetings, and I just greatly appreciate the consensus building here for the success of higher education in Nevada. I watched the action of collaboration and teamwork, and it didn't come easy. It was hard fought, quite truthfully. But you all did it, and I want to say we all have done it together. And because of that, we've accomplished much. So thank you for that great report. And thank you, Crystal and Theo, for your work on that as well. Most of the time, things that come hard are the best. So thank you. All right, and we will move on to item number 9 for the new and existing program review. Thank you, Trina.
As Tarina approaches the podium, I'll just remind the committee members, there's actually four parts to this agenda item. So there is the new program report, the existing program report, and then we'll have two presentations, one from UNLV and one from Great Basin College, as they provide an overview of essentially how they conduct their existing program review. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tarina.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Tarina Caserdo, NG. Yes, item number 9 contains the two annual reports, the new program review and existing program review. Starting with the new program review, this meets the reporting requirements of board policy in which new programs at the university, state, and community colleges shall be reviewed following the first, third, and fifth year of existence. Generally, the review compares full-time equivalent headcount and expenditures projected in the original program proposal to the actual figures in the first, third, and fifth year. Also, in the past, Academic and Student Affairs Committee requested that institutions provide a more detailed summary for programs whose enrollment were low relative to the projected enrollment levels. Should you have any questions on the programs reviewed, I would defer to the respective institutions to answer.
Are there any questions for any of the institutions? Regent Perkins, you're grinning at me. Do you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. You're welcome to. I think the discussion is really critical. All right. Thank you.
Next, so I present the existing program review. This report also meets board policy in that reviewing of existing academic programs shall be conducted by the university, state, and community colleges on at least a 10-year cycle. This assures academic quality, and it helps determine if need, student demand, and available resources support the program continuation. You will find that each program reviewed will contain a summary page and highlights the each program reviewed will contain a report and summary page, and it will also, the institutions report on all eliminated and deleted programs and new programs from the last year. Should you have any questions on these programs, I once again would defer to the respective institutions to answer.
Any questions?
Regent Carter, I see you down there.
I actually have a question on A, and I'm sorry. On the third year and the fifth year estimates, those are the original estimates from when the project or the degree program was proposed. It's not updated as they progress, correct?
Correct, Regent Carter. So when the proposal comes to you, we ask for, or the institution reports what they project FTE headcount and expenditures for the program will be. So those first three columns are what was in the original proposal, and then what the actuals were at the point of the first, third, and fifth year. You'll notice that there's fall term data and for the entire academic year data, although typically what's in the report is the fall figures only, but we include the full academic year because in some cases if the program gets off to a slow start and maybe they don't have the enrollments in the fall, occasionally they pick up in the spring, so we include both numbers for the purpose of comparison.
Okay, thank you. Now, I was just surprised by the great increase in a couple of the programs. So like WNC's business program was estimated at 15 and they had 100, or like UNLV 92 and they had 179, so I guess that's good. That's all for me. Thank you.
I think that is good. Are there any other questions or comments? All right, thank you. Moving on.
Okay, thank you. So based on board policy established, we will now have two presentations, one from UNLV and one from GBC this year to discuss. Each will discuss at least one program review from their respective institutions. We will start with UNLV and then I'll move on to GBC. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Heavey, Interim Provost at UNLV. Happy to talk to you about our program review process at UNLV and to share with you a high-level overview of the program we did, a program review we did in communication studies. As you know, that we all are charged by our accreditation agency as well as the board to make sure that we have a continuous process of monitoring and improving the quality of our academic offerings. This includes for us an annual academic assessment report where we look at student learning each year within each program, as well as a deep dive program review every 10 years for every ongoing program, meeting both our board mandate and the mandate from our accreditation agency, the NWCCU. We do our program review process in two phases. The first phase happens over two different semesters, typically fall-spring, but sometimes it's spring and then the following fall. The first semester is a self-study prepared by the program in which the program is asked to talk about the alignment of their program with the institutional mission, review comprehensive student data that is we provide to them that shows their enrollment trends over a number of years, to talk about their graduate outcomes and to look at the quality and impact of their program. They also look at the faculty productivity of those faculty who participate in the program, the adequacy of the resources that are used to sustain the program, and we conduct a survey of students within the program as well as faculty and use that information to ask the program to reflect on the strengths and challenges that they identify with their program. We then take that self-study into the second semester, and we identify external reviewers that we invite to campus to come and meet with the program faculty, students, alumni, and the leadership of the university, including the dean and the vice provost of academic programs who oversees this process. And they start by reviewing the self-study and then come to campus for their visit, which usually happens over about a day and a half, where they have all of these meetings and get a chance to form an opinion about the program. And then they take that information and go back and provide us with an external reviewer report, a consensus report from the two external reviewers within approximately 30 days of their visit. And that report then is essentially what the finished product is for the review that we use to think about the strengths, weaknesses, and any kinds of changes that are needed within the program. So the program that we want to talk to you about today is a bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Arts in Communication Studies, and we'll talk about kind of four buckets of information. The one is the alignment of the program with the UNLV mission and the UNLV core themes, the data that we have on employment outcomes, the data that we have related to program quality, including enrollment data, degrees conferred, et cetera. And we want to talk a little bit about a curricular review process that they underwent to do a kind of comprehensive review of their curriculum and what that led to in terms of changes. So in terms of the alignment, UNLV has four core themes. These are three of our four core themes: student achievement, research, scholarship, creative activity, and community partnership. The other core theme is the Academic Health Center, which is not a core theme that's directly relevant to our bachelor's degree of communication studies, so we didn't talk about that one. But these are the three that align with the program, and we'll talk a little bit about their work in each of these. I'll leave the student achievement for a little bit, but talk about the research, scholarship, and creative activity. As we said, we look at the productivity of the faculty within the program. In this particular program, there were nine full-time faculty who are on the staff of the department. In the year that they did the program review, they produced three monographs, two books, and 32 peer-reviewed journals, showing that they're actively contributing to the research, scholarship, and creative activity core theme of the university. They also, this program runs a nationally recognized debate program, and that's one of the key partnerships or key types of community engagement that they facilitate for the campus, and so we've been very proud of their work. In terms of the employment outcomes, we're looking at what employers are asking for in terms of the skill set of graduates, both in terms of individual meetings with employers and the national literature on what employers need. We see that the kinds of things that employers rank very highly in terms of their desires are the kinds of things that the communication studies bachelor's degree focuses on: ability of students to speak well, reason, write, convey complex information, research, have good rhetorical skills and good relational skills. These are all the kinds of outcomes that the bachelor's degree in communication studies focuses on. And in terms of looking at the graduation student placements, we know that we've placed many graduates of this degree into important positions that are directly related to the skills they develop within the degree, including being civic leaders, communication directors. We have some who've gone to work at CSN and others who have gone on to graduate studies using the skills that they've developed within the program. We don't have comprehensive post-graduation employment information, but we've actually recently secured a new product that will help us have a better understanding of where all of the students are going to from all of our programs by culling data from social media. And we're looking forward to being able to use that to understand the post-graduation employment outcomes of our students. Looking at the just overall program data, this is a healthy program that's serving over 300 students in the year that they were reviewed, and that's kind of a standard number. They have a pre-major where students begin in that, and then they, in their junior, senior year, they're in the actual communication studies major. They also have a major presence in our general education curriculum with their public speaking course, where they're enrolling over 3,000 students every year, have many upper division enrollments, and they're generally conferring about 100 degrees every year. And so we see this as a program that's well enrolled and is serving many students both as a major and across the campus. As I mentioned earlier, one of the things that this program did is they participate in a comprehensive curricular review process that we've started on our campus. We call it the curricular coherence process, and that is a process where the campus or the program looks at all of their courses and all of the curriculums, all the courses being offered as part of their curriculum, and that helped them identify a number of new courses that they had added recently and some new courses that they thought they should build in to make their curriculum more up to date. They also identified courses they haven't offered in a long time, and they were able to remove 24 courses from their curriculum that essentially were not being offered. They also did within courses trying to make what they call agile courses, where they could easily be made available online, hybrid, and face-to-face, making sure there's standardization of the course across the different delivery methods. And going to the question that was asked earlier, this is one of the courses, one of the degrees that we are now moving to offer fully online. So we have a full face-to-face offering, but as of this year, we're offering this as a fully online degree as well. And so we're proud of that. And as part of the curricular review process, they also found that they had a higher than desirable DFWI rate in one of their key courses, their public speaking course. And so they did a major revision of that course, lowering their DFWI rate from about 28% to about 18%. And so they were able to, through that curriculum revision process, really improve the outcomes of students in that course. And the overall findings of the program review, they had some commendations and some recommendations. So they praised the program for the course redesign efforts that they had gone through, the ones that I just mentioned in terms of lowering the DFWI rate, and the ones that removed from the curriculum courses that weren't being offered and identified some courses that needed to be offered. They also found that the faculty of the program got along well and were very supportive of students. The students had high praise for the faculty in terms of their availability and their teaching, and generally the kinds of support that they were providing to the students. We're also happy to say that this was a financially healthy program, which is often not the case. They have plenty of resources to support their efforts, and that's always a pleasant surprise when that comes out of the review process. And as we said, they're strong in community engagement, particularly their debate team, which is very high profile, traveling around the country and doing very well, as well as other forms of community engagement that they have going on within their department. They did have some specific recommendations. They said that they wanted to suggested a more transparent leadership style with more faculty input. And what's behind that is that the program had brought in an external chair because they needed to make some changes, and that external chair had come in and been successful in making some of those changes, but maybe had moved a little more quickly than would be ideal, and maybe with not as much full transparency and faculty input. And so they commented on that, and that was feedback that's been taken to heart, and they're trying to make sure that as they move forward, they do it at an appropriate pace and with substantial faculty input in respect of the shared governance. They also are trying to diversify the faculty. This is a widespread challenge across all of our programs, and they're trying to be very proactive in making sure that in their future hiring, they strive to diversify their faculty. And they suggested by the reviewers that they increase their presence at professional associations, which essentially is that they have a very good story to tell and that they should get out there and tell people about the kind of work they've done to improve their program and the kinds of successes that they're having within the program. And finally, just kind of reflecting on our process broadly, as I mentioned, we haven't had in place a system for comprehensively tracking the outcomes of our students, and so we have taken some steps to secure some ability to do that, and so we think that will be helpful for all of our programs. We also didn't have annual assessment reports for every year available from this program, and that's an important part of the kind of continuous improvement process, and so we want to make sure that going forward we do have those annual assessment reports available. And those annual assessment reports help us track the achievement of student learning outcomes, and because those reports weren't available, we weren't always able to know as much as we felt we should about the student learning outcomes. And in general, we want to make sure that we maintain our compliance with our annual assessment reporting process and that we continue to educate programs how they can document the achievement of student learning outcomes. And that's a kind of a culture change. We've done pretty well on that as a campus. We actually got a commendation on our annual assessment work from our last NWCCU review, but anybody who's in these leadership positions know that it's been an evolution of campuses over the last decade or so to get the programs to realize the importance of the assessment process for helping to understand the extent to which we're achieving our stated student learning outcomes. And so that's the overview of our process. Happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Are there any questions?
Of course.
I really appreciated the report. That's great success. Yes, Regent Perkins.
Yes, I do. I was wondering about the DF and I's. That was for speech class. So what was the thought process and what changed it to make the completes more?
That's a good question. I'd have to defer to somebody else who was more directly involved in that. I think Laurel Pritchard, who was here a second ago, but she actually just left, runs the curricular coherence process. And I'm not sure what they did. I know that they identified what we've done as a campus, as looked at all of our high enrollment courses and looked at the DFWI rates for those courses. And when they've been high, we've asked those people to go in and look at all aspects of their courses. And I'm not sure of the particular changes that they made in their Comm 101 class to achieve those better outcomes.
Well, I'm just thinking public speaking, if you make it any easier, that would help out a great deal.
Yes. We know it's an important skill and that many people are frightened of that class. I've heard the story about what they did for that, but I can't remember the details of it.
And I did have to smile when you said one of the recommendations was that they tell their story in a communications program. So yeah. To me, that just says we always all have something to learn about communication.
Yeah.
So thank you. Yes, Regent Lieberman.
I just want to comment that this was brought up several years ago as a concern, and the way it was addressed and the way our alumni are functioning in the community as a result of this program and the way the debate program is really at the forefront of an example of what this program does and can do is a real progress benchmark for all of us. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on the financial stability of it, which reminds me that I forgot to mention to Crystal and Theo with the mandate on the last information item that you're seeking funding for that mandate. As a regent, I'm always concerned about that. When we mandate something and we are unable to provide the funding to our institutions to do that. So really appreciate your efforts for that. Thank
Chair,
you very much.
Chair McAdoo, I believe Regent, I did have a question.
Yes, you. Regent Carter.
Sure. Do you have the four-year, six-year graduation rate for that program?
I don't have it off the top of my head. We do track that definitely at the program level and provide those data out proactively to each program every year to make sure that they're aware of that and any trends that are occurring. The general, you know, number that we hover around is the 44% number for the six-year graduation rate. I'd have to look up. Do you have the number for that specific program?
Well, the other thought, I guess, to the committee.
So it's 42.9.
Okay.
So they're right in, which is right in the bandwidth of where our general six-year graduation rate is.
The other comment I was going to ask to the committee or Vice Chancellor Abba, as I jump back to our report, and under descriptive statistics, we don't report that on our report. And I thought maybe that would be a great addition to either have probably the six-year graduation rate.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure that all of the institutions track graduation rates by program level, but we can certainly add that, and if they're unable to provide it, to put an explanation. But I think that's a great idea, because what's in the report now, as you know, is just the degree productivity, so awards conferred, but it doesn't give an indication of are they cranking them through within a reasonable period of time.
Okay, thank you for your report, and thank you for that comment, Regent Carter. I think that was a good suggestion.
Madam Chair, as Jake approaches the podium for the GBC presentation, I realized in looking at this agenda that it actually reflects the charge of this committee. This committee is responsible for overseeing academic programs from cradle to grave. So you had the planning report item, which is pre-proposal. You had three academic programs that you approved. You had the new program review, which is when a program is initially kicked off and less than 10 years old. You had the existing program review. The only thing that's missing from that life cycle that this committee is responsible for oversight for is an elimination or a deactivation. So I don't know why I didn't spot this a long time ago, but this, and it's funny, it's because we do it every single December, but it literally reflects the full charge of the committee in overseeing that life cycle. So you should leave with a sense of, you know, what are we doing and what are we responsible for? This agenda perfectly exemplifies that. So, Jake, it's all yours now. I teed him up for you.
Jake Rivera, Vice President for Student and Academic Affairs at Great Basin College, for the record. All right, so I'm going to talk about two programs today, early childhood education as well as our computer technology programs. The early childhood education program started at Great Basin College in the early 1990s. In fact, the current program director for the ECE program graduated with an associate degree in early childhood education in 1995 from GBC. As you know, in rural Nevada, we need to grow our own workforce, demonstrating the importance of this specific program. Another great example of the importance and the mission of the ECE program is the 2017 Regent Scholar, Shiara Holmes. At that time, Shiara was enrolled in the Associate of Arts in ECE and facilitated the development of a community library for the children of the Duck Valley Indian Reservation in OIE. Shiara has since graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Elementary Education and has been hired to start teaching in OIE in September of 2020. GBC follows ENCHI Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 4 on Program Review. Program review is to assure academic quality and to determine if need, student demand, and available resources support continuation. Per GBC policy, a program review consists of a colleague in the same or related discipline from another college, a GBC faculty member from a related area, a representative from the business industry, and a faculty member from the same discipline from GBC. The early childhood education program prepares students for entry-level employment and licensed preschool and child care programs. The early childhood education program was reviewed for the years 2014 through 2018. So the ECE program has an Associate of Arts degree, two Associate of Applied Science degrees with an emphasis areas, and two Certificates of Achievements. The emphasis areas are early childhood for ages birth through 8 years old and infant toddler for ages birth through 5 years old. These programs are available online, which is very beneficial to rural areas GBC serves and other students throughout Nevada in the critical needs specialty area of early childhood education. These certificates and associate degrees were developed so one feeds into the other. Certificate to associate degree and allows the possibility for the student to finish a BA in elementary education. The early childhood education program allows students to work at licensed early childhood programs or as paraprofessionals in school district classrooms. All students in the program are required to complete practicums and internships in accredited licensed facilities and or kindergarten classrooms. In addition, the early childhood education program works very closely with Head Start programs throughout Nevada to provide federally mandated training opportunities. Due to the interconnection of the ECE curriculum, the associate degrees and certificates were reviewed as one program. As of fall 2018, 127 students had declared early childhood education as their major, 115 in an associate pathway, and 12 in the certificate pathway. There are approximately 243 students enrolled in any early childhood education course related to the program. During the years of 2014 through 2018, there were 113 graduates, 29 in 2014, 24 in 15, 24 in 16, 18 in 17, and 18 in 2018. As you notice, the graduation trend has declined. Some of the reasons for this decline are, one, the need for additional faculty. We hired an additional faculty member July of 2019 in response. Advisement tracking for completion. The addition of another faculty member and additional advisor should help with guidance towards completion. Back in 2014 through 2016, GBC students automatically had received their certificate when they received an associate degree. This practice ceased in 2017, and most students chose not to apply for the certificate at an additional cost. The reason for this change came about due to financial aid concerns. And four, students must actively work full or part-time in licensed preschool facility or the school district to receive the Teach Early Childhood Education Scholarship funding. Due to this, most of the students are attending part-time. The Teach Scholarship funding has increased recently, therefore more students are working in the field. Also, the Teach Scholarship pays for the associate degree, but not certificates. Even though the graduation rate has declined, the enrollment is trending upward. In fall of 2015, there were 120 enrolled students. 2016, there were 150 enrolled students. 2017, there were 183 enrolled students. And in fall of 2018, there were 243 enrolled students. Currently, the program has an opportunity to potentially collaborate with an international partner beginning in fall 2020 on the Early Childhood Toddler Program. We're really excited. I actually received an email regarding the MOU on that process before I came up. So this partnership could actually add up to 100 students annually to the Early Childhood Education Program.
Just to be clear, so we're graduating in the last 2 years 18 students from the program, and when you have enrollment trends, are these enrollments in the program or enrollments in a course that's contained within that program?
It may be enrollments in a course contained within that program.
Because these numbers don't make sense, that you would have so many more students coming in and we're graduating fewer and fewer students at a less than 10% of the students, if these are students enrolled in the program as opposed to in a class.
Yes, and that's one of my focus areas too, which is to look at high enrollments but low graduation. So we are aware of that. That is an issue that we're looking at, and we're making sure that we have to build the advisement aspect up. That's what I was talking about earlier. That will be a continual focus for us in terms of getting these students through completion.
And again, is this enrollment in a class within the program, the 243 students for the fall of 2018?
The 243, let me just clarify, the 243 are duplicated. That's duplicated enrollment.
What's duplicated enrollment?
So that means that student might be in more than one ECE course. So our program review identified the following strengths of the ECE program: the online and hybrid format of courses available to students across Nevada and beyond, the faculty, student, and community support for early childhood program is strong, the job placement rate for graduates from 2014-18 is at 87% based on the student survey results. And the graduate survey also indicates that 89% of the students were very satisfied with the program. The program has been recognized by bestcolleges.com and affordablecolleges.com. Strong ties with community licensed preschool programs in the Elko County School District early childhood programs. And our student rating reports noted a high quality delivery of instruction. The program review identified the following areas for opportunities to improve. So, addressing what you were just bringing up, we need to focus on completion and graduation rates. Expand practicum options by utilizing child care programs participating in Nevada's Silver State Stars Quality Rating and Improvement System program. There was a suggestion to hire a second faculty member, and this has been completed. The program review committee did not recommend any change to the student learning outcomes. GBC believes the ECE program is viable and a needed program for Nevada in a critical shortage area, especially for rural Nevada. So again, to help with the growth of the ECE program, we're focusing on increasing those graduation rates by hiring an additional advisor, which was completed October 1st of 2019, evaluating the options for additional practicums throughout Nevada. This has not been completed, but is in the process. The other opportunity is to improve to improve is to add a bachelor's degree for ECE education. This has been added to the GBC master list. Any questions on early childhood before we go on to computer technology?
Do you know the six-year graduation rate?
I do not. I kind of prepared when you asked the when you asked UNL fee. So, but I can get that information for you.
Thank you. Regent Perkins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The certificate programs, are they covered by the Pell Grant? Because they do follow up to a...
They are.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yep. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? I just have one comment, and really it's to just encourage us as regents in what we do. The very first story that you told, Jake, about Shiara Holmes, who is a student from Owyhee, Nevada, right on the Idaho border, we as the regents awarded her our Regent Scholar in 2017, and so it was very rewarding to me and encouraging to me to see that she has graduated and that she's going back home to teach. That was her goal all along, and she's been very concerned about the students in her community. So that was a heartwarming story. I just have to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay, so computer technology. The computer technology or CTE programs and emphasis areas held their five-year program review. The emphasis areas are computer programming AAS, network, specialist AAS, office technology AAS, and certification of achievement, graphic communications, associate of arts, associate of applied science, and certificate of achievement, medical coding, and billing certificate of achievement. The review was conducted according to NG policy and by policy. We used an outside reviewer that was selected to validate the program review information and provide feedback on the programs. Other computer technology areas covered by this review were credentials provided by CISC, CompTIA, Microsoft, and the American Health Information Management Association. The program reviewer met with all constituents, including students, graduates, faculty, administration, and industry members. All perspectives were considered, as was all the program review data. The reviewer validated the internal report generated by the Computer Technology Department, and the information gathered was provided to the department in a written report and had accommodation and recommendations. The program review numbers show the aggregate of computer technology emphasis areas. So when the numbers are broken down by areas, the report indicates room for improvement. Here we have in 18-19, 149 students with a declared major in computer technology. The number of CTE graduates increased from 16-17 to 18-19 by 28%. And then fall of 2018, we saw a duplicated headcount of 478 students enrolled in any course related to the program. Here you'll notice, going back to fall 2015, we had higher enrollment. So by fall 18, we were down 7.3% in enrollment. Once again, we had a dip in graduation rates in 17-18, but by 18-19, that figure rebounded. These challenges were also evident in GBC's recent curricular review process that all of our programs, all GBC programs underwent. And that's just within the last 2 months. The curricular review process showed areas where some CT programs had low enrollment numbers and other CT programs were identified with low enrollment numbers and low persistent rates. So these programs are working on strategies to make improvements. Some of these areas' strategies are limiting program options to provide a direct path to graduation, seeking professional development for faculty and staff, working with other program areas to combine programs, and looking at course packaging to capture workforce needs to create effective degree offerings. So these strategies are already being implemented, but will need to be continually worked on. And then finally, some of the highlights put forward by the program review are, one, all the degree offerings in the courses are offered online, giving students access to their coursework 24/7. There's a quick response to industry needs, such as the creation of the Cisco pathway for Nevada gold mines. The computer technology program indicates great employment opportunities for its graduates. And GBC faculty are engaged in program improvements. This concludes the GBC computer technology program review. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
So has Starfish at all helped with some of these, like tracking and things like that, or has that been implemented yet?
We've already started the implementation for Starfish. We're still working out a few bugs between PeopleSoft and the Starfish system, but that has been ongoing weekly. We meet with Starfish.
Any others? Any questions? No. Thank you for the report, Jake. Appreciate that. Do you have any other comments, Vice Chancellor?
No.
Thank you to the institutions and to the system staff for the hard work for that report. Thank you. I forgot to turn my mic on. Thank you to the system staff and the institutions for all the effort and work you put in for the report. And we will move on to the handbook revision in item number 10, and I believe Vice Chancellor Abba will be doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, you have before you a handbook revision, a briefing paper, and the actual policy proposal. This actually includes three awards for researcher. So for the Regents Researcher Award, there is a mid-career award and a distinguished career award. In addition, several years ago, the board added a rising researcher award for a researcher who's in the early years of his career. Traditionally, this award has been open to the universities and DRI, and with the support of AAC and or the Academic Affairs Council and the Research Affairs Council, this proposal would effectively expand it so that Nevada State faculty could be considered for the award as well. They will not be considered in the current award cycle, as those awards will come to you in essentially at the next meeting, but for the next award cycle that starts in the summer, they would be eligible. So with that, I would beg the committee's approval.
So moved.
Second.
All right, Regent Lieberman moved, and Regent Perkins seconded that. Are there any questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. I vote aye as well. The motion passes. Thank you. And we will move on to agenda item number 11, new business. Is there any new business to be recommended to be brought before us? I see none. We will move to item 12 for public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno? Is there any public comment in Elko? I don't think they're actually online.
No video. I'm sorry.
Right? And is there any public comment here in this room in Las Vegas? All right. Then the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.